Hello, you're listening to They Came From the North, the slightly warped, maybe more than a little bent, podcast from the frozen north of Canada. You've probably listened to us by now, so you know the drill. A bunch of belligerent Canucks get together, we rap about directors for far too long. And it's generally something that I like to refer to as a director's endurance test. You know, you basically sit back, see how long you can last before our wacky accents, our insane views and opinions, which are not those of our parent company, DVDVerdict.com, or its parent company, Noradine Defense Dynamics. Anyway, with me are, from La Belle Province of Quebec, Mr. Gabriel Gerard.
Bonjour.
And the not-so-bell province of Newfoundland, Mr. John Mercer.
My friend, in 5 minutes you won't give a shit about the people.
I'm, of course, your host, Mr. Steve Bauer. Not with us this evening because he took the chicken shit way out and punched his own ticket, Mr. Andrew Forbes. The topic of...
He wanted to talk about Ingmar Bergman, and we slammed the door shut.
We closed a deep fridge on his... Anyway, our topic of discussion tonight, probably what scared poor Mr. Forbes away, is the somewhat controversial, somewhat insane, but always entertaining, Paul Verhoeven. Paul Verhoeven graduated...
The Mad Dutchman.
You interrupted my bio! How dare you, sir? Paul Verhoeven graduated from the University of Leiden with a degree in math and physics. He entered the Royal Netherlands Navy, where he began his film career by making documentaries for the Navy and later for television. In 1969, he directed the popular Dutch TV series Floris, about a medieval knight. I probably pronounced that wrong, but who cares? It's Dutch. About a medieval knight. This featured actor, Rutger Hauer, who has appeared in many of Verhoeven's later films. Verhoeven's first feature, Wat Zien Ik, translated What Do I See, was released in 1971. However, it was his second, Turk's Fruit, 1973, with its combination of raw sexuality and a poignant storyline that gained him great popularity in the Netherlands, especially with male audiences. Is that any surprise? When his films, especially Soldier of Orange from 1977 and De Weerdman, 1983, received international recognition, Verhoeven moved to the U.S. His first U.S. film was Flesh and Blood from 1985, which starred Rutger Hauer. But it was RoboCop in 1987 that made him a big box office success. He followed that up with Total Recall, Arnold Schwarzenegger's huge, big, you know, crazy, probably pretty much Arnold's biggest blockbuster, I think, wasn't it?
One of, surely.
Yeah.
He's sometimes accused of portraying excessive violence in his film. Verhoeven replies that he is only recording the violence of society. Sure, Paul, sure. He has co-scripted two of his films, Soldier of Orange and Flesh and Blood, and he also directed an episode of the HBO The Hitchhiker TV series, which was actually kind of cool. Several of his films were filmed by director of photography Jost Vacano, including the hit cult film Starship Troopers, starring Casper Van Dien. With that, let's get down to business.
Oh, and talking about that director of photography, I just want to mention that the director of Speed, Jan de Bont, started working as a director of photography with Verhoeven in Holland.
He did, yeah, he did. Let's get right down to business. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty, as they say. And, well, you know, if there's anybody more nitty-gritty than Paul Verhoeven, I haven't met him. Maybe Oliver Stone on a bad day.
I love that. You know, he films the violence of society. That society is, you know, Mega City 1 from Judge Dredd.
We'll start with, I'm going to flip a coin. Heads or tails?
Heads.
Tails.
It landed on its edge. Shit, I'm flipping again. Heads.
So usually we start discussing our favorite film or what we think is the best film of Verhoeven. And I was kind of torn on this one because, I mean, when you look at it, there's two sides to Verhoeven. There's the American blockbuster side and the artistic European side. And I decided to go with his latest movie, The Black Book. Which I'd say it's both like a prestigious art pick, but at the same time, there's a lot of Verhoeven quirks in it.
Yeah.
Full frontal male nudity, scenes with feces, a lot of like disgusting stuff in there. It's a really, really entertaining movie that moves like gangbusters with a lot of plot twist. It's really, really well made. The actors are all good. It looks great. I don't know. It's a really good movie all the way through, I find. I don't really have much negative things to say about Black Book.
One thing I'll say about Black Book, I think it's probably his nicest looking film. It's really got a unique look to it. Like, it's got at first glance, I wouldn't have said it was a Verhoeven movie. It almost does look a bit more, you know, artsy, I guess. It does look like more of an art film. It almost looks more like, you know, Roger Deakins or someone like that really shot the hell out of it. There's a lot of heavy shadow. There's a lot of texture in there, you know?
But still, when you compare it with something like The Soldier of Orange,
yeah,
it's in the same continuity.
Yeah.
And Verhoeven has always had this kind of slick look to some of his films, like with The Fourth Man and Basic Instinct 2. And I don't know, it's a side of the war that we also rarely see with like kind of the Dutch resistance, which was interesting with Soldier of Orange. And there's that all like gray area of like, you're infiltrated and then like you become like the main character is of Jewish origins and she closes up with a Nazi officer to infiltrate the Nazis, and so then she's seen as a collaborator after the war.
Also, Carice Van Houten was beautiful in this movie.
Oh yeah. And I really like Sebastian Koch, who plays Münzer.
Yep.
He's a really great, one of the really good modern German actors. And I don't know, there's something about that movie that you don't... I think a lot of Verhoeven flicks, they're often guilty pleasures. And Black Book is his most, like, quote-unquote prestige pick that you don't necessarily need to defend, although there's a lot of disgusting and like weird stuff in there.
It doesn't feel exploitative like some, like, you know, RoboCop or Starship Troopers. They really exploit the violence, and well, I mean, Showgirls, Basic Instinct are total exploitation movies, you know, like they're, but what I like about Black Book is, yes, there's some disturbing content in there, and I mean, yeah, it does get pretty visceral, but it never feels like it's played for exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it feels like more of a, like, I dare say it's his most accessible movie. Like it's the one I could see film goers enjoying the most of his body of work. You know, like people who just want a movie like RoboCop. I mean, it's hard science fiction, dystopian, you know, all of us, all us geeks love RoboCop or Starship Troopers or something, you know, but Black Book is really kind of a more, Like just, I guess, an accessible adult feature, you know?
Also, as a story about, you know, the Dutch resistance during World War II, it does feel like a little more personal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like, we've always talked about in the past, you know, you've got the Steven Spielberg who directed Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then you've got the Steven Spielberg who did Schindler's List or Private Ryan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And Black Book feels like it's, you know, Verhoeven who's... And I'm not going to say he was just doing the other stuff as a paycheck, but this, like Gabe said earlier, this is the Verhoeven as an artist rather than as directing a movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
And he's shown interest in that before with Soldier of Orange, which is also very good.
It was a great flick, yeah.
Soldier of Orange is lacking that Verhoeven touch, those quirks, you know?
Yeah, it does feel a bit more stock.
So, yeah, Black Book is my choice, although I could have chosen, you know, RoboCop or Starship Troopers as well, but I find that it didn't really come to attention around here. Like, not a lot of people heard about it. And it's really deserving of some attention.
And it's on Canadian Netflix, so look it up.
How about you, John?
Oh, I'm not going to be as brave as Gabe. You know, as selfless in trying to champion a movie that not a whole ton of people have seen. I'm just going to – what else can I say? RoboCop. Now let's examine that for a second. Okay, the movie is called RoboCop. He is a cop who is also a robot. There is a word for that, and that word is timeless. Okay, this is just – and, you know, we were saying – you know, it's hard sci-fi. You know, movie geeks love it. I have never met a single person who has seen RoboCop and not enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Not just had, like, it's one of those hoot and hollering.
Yeah.
Just blast from start to finish, gets going right away. Amazing movies that they stopped making in 1996.
My thing with RoboCop, I love RoboCop. I mean, I'm a huge fan. I even own, like, all the crappy Dark Justice TV episodes and stuff. So, like, I'm a big fan.
Bone Machine was amazing.
I'm a big fan of RoboCop as a character and as a concept. I mean, I enjoy it. But my thing with RoboCop is, you know, the first time I saw RoboCop was in the summer of 1988 on VHS.
When I was way too young to be seeing it. Yeah.
And I mean, you know, it was one of those movies that everyone I know watched. Everybody in my grade, you know, in school, saw this movie over summer break because our parents rented us RoboCop. And what's even more retarded is it was a while after it was in theaters that it hit video. It was, I think it was almost a year.
It was. Yeah. RoboCop was the of 1987.
Yeah, and then like the VHS tape, like the VHS / beta tape didn't come out for about a year. It was like early summer or midsummer before it hit home video, you know?
I do think part of that though, man, is that it was an unexpected success in theaters.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it also, see, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, when we were younger, like in the 80s and everything, theaters, it wasn't as big as it is now.
No.
Like, you know, people who talk about, like people, when they saw Terminator for the first time, 95% of us saw Terminator on home video because it was a limited release.
Or on television.
Yeah. RoboCop was not a huge wide release, but it was one of those things, you know, word of mouth really carried and theaters started saying, well, you know, I got to get this picture in here.
Yeah.
You know, this is a real crowd pleaser. And that's just the way stuff was, you know, back in the day. Stuff didn't come out on, we didn't have a 3-month turnaround to home video.
No, we did. We did have RoboCop here in theaters though.
Oh, yes, I'm sure we did.
We did. I had wanted to see it in theater, and I remember being at the cabin that weekend that it opened and seeing
it. Did you ever see the TV spot for the movie where it's totally aimed at six-year-olds?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those last-ditch things of the 80s, you know, where, like you look at the original Conan the Barbarian. I mean, the movie came out and was a huge surprise hit, and then when they found out why, it was because it was more people under the age of 15 or under the age of 13 that were watching it. So then, of course, with Conan the Destroyer, they thought, well, let's aim for the younger audience and we'll get that many more people in theaters. And, yeah, well, we all know how that ended, you know?
No, what the kids want is the violence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, I mean, I remember sitting down to watch RoboCop for the first time. I had rented it for my birthday. And, you know, we had about 12 guys sitting around in the rec room with our mom's old 27-inch floor model television watching RoboCop, and I mean, the first time we saw a bit of violence, like when, you know, the Alex Murphy execution scene hit, everybody was just like, oh my god, what are we watching?
You know? I think I couldn't take that scene the first time I tried to watch it when I was a kid. I was like, well, this is too much for me. And
this
I shut
is
it down.
Like,
well, you see, they've got to kind of ease you into it. I can't remember which one comes first, Alex Murphy or poor Mr. Kenny.
I believe it was Alex Murphy came. No, it might have been Mr. Kenny.
Well, one or the other. They've got to do it. You know, it's kind of trying to get you the idea of just how gory this movie
was
going to be.
And I mean, we'd seen Mr. Kenny and thought that was pretty brutal. But then when we saw Alex Murphy, it was like, oh, wow. You know?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, then every moment after that, whenever any violence kicks in, it's blood and snot everywhere, you know?
Well, I always love it. And you only ever see this in Verhoeven movies. When a squib goes off, it doesn't just blow like a bit of blood. There's, you can see like chunks of clothing and meat go flying.
Oh, he's crazy. Like, the man is insane.
And that's just, that's part of RoboCop's appeal, is just as an action movie, it is, it's just, it's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, and right? The other thing about it, you know, like you had these guys like Richard Donner and John McTiernan, you know, even Spielberg to an extent, cracking out like these crazy action sequences and stuff in the 80s. And then you got this guy from the Netherlands who comes over. And as far as Donner and McTiernan are concerned, absolutely wipes the floor with them.
Yep.
The action sequences in RoboCop were freaking amazing.
The I believe the scene is called Rock Shop. I know that's what the piece of music is called.
Yeah, yeah.
Is one of the greatest gunfights I've ever seen put on. I always hold it up with like the Mardi Gras graveyard from Hard Target or the gauntlet from Hard Boiled.
Yes.
And but it's handled so differently. You know, you're not this guy diving around avoiding bullets. You've got a walking tank.
Just taking everybody apart.
Yeah, and it, when he eventually gets to the part when he starts doing what became the RoboCop trademark of shooting at someone while looking in the other direction. You know, well, no, because you see him looking around and laying the crosshairs on everyone, right? Recording where his targets are.
Yep.
And when it finally gets to that part where, you know, he starts tilting his head to pick up the next target and then just puts his arm in the other direction and blows some other guy away, it is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Every action sequence in RoboCop, and I mean, they're not crazy elaborate.
No, but they're awesomely just cut together. It's just, so well.
It's shot beautifully, and I mean, everything about the movie I love. The villains of RoboCop are fucking amazing.
Oh yeah.
You know, you've got Ronnie Cox, who was born to play evil.
He just made doozes.
Yeah, the guy is just, but it's not like evil evil. It's more sleazebag evil, right?
Yeah.
And then you've got – and I'm really, really sad of what happened to Kurtwood Smith, you know, because everyone remembers Kurtwood Smith now as Red Foreman,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And my fondest memories of Kurtwood Smith are not dumbass. My fondest memories are, you know, you burned the fucking money.
But that's a thing, too. Like when I was watching it, that was remembering what we said about Cliffhanger and John Lithgow. And you look at Kurtwood Smith, and he doesn't look that much more, you know, impressive, but just the way he acts is so much better.
He is vicious, though, right?
Yeah.
I buy the fact that this guy is a complete sociopath. You know, he is, that is a villain I can buy just, you know, crossing that line. He's just, you know, there's never a moment of doubt that that is what he would do to a cop who walked into his little hideout.
And even the guys weren't, like, you've got Miguel Ferrer.
Yep.
Another great scumbag. I mean, that's one of, that, I know, Steve, that's one of, like, our group, that's one of our often quoted pieces. I'm cashing you out.
I'm cashing you out, Bob.
I had to kill Bob Morton because he made a mistake.
it is like such a collection of just graphic lunacy. But at the same time, what's kind of cool about it, and I think it's been kind of overpraised by the cinephile crowd for this, but still the fact that Verhoeven, you know, took that angle on it and stuff was like a lot of the dystopian stuff, like a lot of the, you know, the commentary on big business and society and how it affects, like how it takes over society, becomes like, and monopoly, like the dangers of monopoly and, you know, and the whole.
Well, you can definitely see a sense that it's a foreigner, you know, it's an outside view.
He's definitely got a message in there.
American directing that movie, it wouldn't have been wrapped in as much black humor.
Yeah. And
unless that director had been John Milius.
It wouldn't have had the social commentary and stuff either, you know, like that stuff wouldn't have been there. And he's pretty, like, yes, I mean, Verhoeven is heavy-handed about it, but that's Verhoeven, you know, he's as subtle as a bag of sledgehammers. So, you know, like, the commentary is there, but that's what I think part of what makes the movie work so well. I think other people, like, you know, a lot of people build it up as to be this, like, one of the first real cyberpunk epics, and I don't consider it a cyberpunk film. I really don't. Because the one element of the movie that still to this day really intrigues me is horribly underdeveloped, and that's the whole, like, the lost humanity and all of that kind of stuff. Like, it's there, but it's not really... Like he's having too much fun with the squibs and the blood and the guts and the explosions and the funny adverts and, you know, the takeoff on 80s, like, corporate culture and stuff. And, I mean, it's all fun.
The guys at the urinal with the stock market.
Yeah, stock market ticker above the urinal and stuff, you know? Like, he's having so much fun with that stuff that I think the cyberpunk elements were,
which is kind of sad because I love the part when, you know, when he's walking through his old house.
It's a cool scene, but it's just it doesn't play out very well, and that's why RoboCop is really not my good.
And that's what I'm saying. You know, you've got that awesome scene, but there's never any real resolution to it.
Yeah,
no.
And of course,
right, like you've got the bit, you know, the cool part when Lewis comes to him and he takes off the faceplate at the end of the movie.
Yeah, but there's just not enough of it.
No, because it's right after that scene, you know, the thing basically just barrels forward right to the end credits.
Yeah, exactly.
And there is, like, some kind of atmosphere of, like, seeing more population, of seeing the city actually alive.
Yeah.
That's missing for it to be, like, a true cyberpunk film.
Yeah.
Because they're always talking about the crime rate and stuff, and the only thing you see outside of the coke... deals is like the guy trying to rape the girl, I think.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that came down to budget because it was a fairly low budget film.
Yeah.
Yeah. But And also
the fact they were, I think the entire movie was shot in like an industrial park somewhere in Atlanta.
Yeah. And I mean,
now, I'll tell you one thing I will give it infinite credit on, even though I know this was, this part of the movie was troubled. Botine's design of RoboCop and Ed 209.
Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah, those are two of the greatest mechanical designs to come out of the 80s.
Yeah, and I mean, I know it's been really popular online lately to bash the hell out of the remake, but I like the idea. One of the interviews that I read with the director about the remake, and I think the foundations were laid when Aronofsky was still attached to it, and the idea of Darren Aronofsky doing a RoboCop remake blew my mind, you know? But the talk is they're really playing up more that side of the story, the whole the human element. They're getting more they're getting more into that cyberpunkish style rather than the corporate send off and stuff like that. And that makes me actually kind of excited to see what they do with the sequel or with the remake, sorry. Like it makes me kind of interested in how they're gonna tackle that side of it, or is it just gonna be another goofy action movie, you know? Yeah, it could go either way. It could be really, really horrible. It could, like, you know, flush what the, like, Verhoeven sensibilities down the toilet in favor of just, you know, a PG-13 action fest. Or it could actually be something worth watching, you know, if it gets into the more intriguing ideas of that character.
Definitely. I'm intrigued by it, too. I mean, Michael Keaton as the bad guy just got my vote.
Yeah, it's got a great cast. It's got a really good cast.
Thank you, Gabe. Thank you. Because I didn't think anyone else appreciated Michael Keaton.
I like Michael Keaton.
Dude, that movie he did in the mid to late 90s with Andy Garcia when he played the bad guy.
Extreme Measures, yeah. That was excellent.
Yeah. You want to see a guy relishing playing a villain?
Yeah.
Or that one about where he's got the house or something, with Melanie Griffith and whatever. Like Pacific Windows or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Anyway, Steve, what's your good?
My good, as much as I want to say RoboCop or even Total Recall, I've got to go with Starship Troopers.
Yay!
Boom!
I have to. Starship Troopers.
Show the love.
Man, it's, you know, like, he does share a lot of the sensibilities on Starship Troopers that he had with RoboCop. Like, there's a lot of the same, you know, it's got Verhoeven basically infusing a little bit of a moral. And I mean, he's not preaching and he's not making a message movie, but he's just putting a little bit of his own.
It's the same screenwriter, right?
Yeah, it's Ed Neumeier as well. Yeah, yeah. And Michael Miner, who I think Michael Miner passed away a few years ago, but it is both of them again. Neumeier and Miner, the guys who wrote RoboCop, and like you know, it is an awesome little, you know, hey, what if the fascists won World War II, you know? And I mean, I read Starship Troopers when I was a teenager. I don't remember that element of it being in there. I know that it was like, you know, that the government was portrayed in a similar fashion to how it was in the movie, but Verhoeven really took that Nazi regalia, that whole, you know, this is the Fourth Reich, you know. He really took that and ran with it.
I still remember, man, sitting in the theaters and looking over at one of my friends. I saw Starship Troopers opening weekend.
Yep.
And looking over at one of my friends going, I think the Nazis won the war in this movie.
But, it's just, you know, people love the shit on, you know, Casper Van Dien and Doogie Howser. But
why would you shit on Casper when Denise Richards is right there?
Yes, exactly. And, I mean, you know what? They played those characters well, man. They, you know, they were supposed to be a bunch of giddy teenagers.
Yeah, okay, and, yeah, it's not... Do you think any of the other young actors at that period could have done that movie?
No.
Like, stick the Buffy crew in Starship Troopers.
It would have been absolutely terrible.
No, it would have been absolutely amazing to see Seth Green get his arm broken by Clancy Brown.
And those guys really do understand the type of movie they're in, because it's supposed to be played like tongue in cheek and not that good either.
Yeah.
But also, you get to see, especially, you know, from the Rico side of things, you get to see, you know, the high school jock, right? The guy who's had this sheltered existence, just how he reacts when everything he knows is just absolutely shattered.
Yeah.
You know, the day prior, you know, he was dating the hottest girl in school and, you know, drawing kissy graphics on his little computer book. And then the next day, you know, fuck it, you're going to war. Your world is over. You're going to war.
I love the look of the movie. And again, you know, Verhoeven shoots the action amazingly well. The creature effects, I think it was Phil Tippett did most of the effects work on the bugs and stuff, man, they were amazing. And I mean, we're talking early CG here. We're talking like, you know, Jurassic Park era CG. And Starship Troopers knocked it out of the park, man.
It still holds up, too.
It holds up extremely well. It looks absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, for something that came out in 1997, there are other movies came out around that time, CG heavy, that looked terrible.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at Event Horizon.
Yeah.
You know, Event Horizon.
What was another big... What was... Del Toro's picture around that time. Mimic.
Yeah, oh, Mimic. Ugh. You know?
Or even better, you want a better example? Compare the CG in Starship Troopers to the ending CG from Alien Resurrection.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The aliens underwater in that, right? It's just... The way the bugs moved was awesome. The way they were designed was awesome. I love the tanker bug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Big flamethrower. That...
It was just all around. I mean, you know, all the action sequences were rousing. I will say narratively, like, it shows the kind of the style in which the novel was written, like that episodic style, like, you know, the such and such campaign and the such and such campaign, you know. The movie does kind of capture that a little bit, and that is a little disorienting, I think. But, you know, I wouldn't take points away for it because it just...
But at the same time, I feel it acknowledges that it's like a throwback to those 60s boys' adventure movies.
Yeah, it's a combination, like, you know, it's a cross between...
There are certain scenes that are shot, like, in the... Especially, like, in the plane, like, the first time Denis Starship takes the ship, Richard takes the ship, and it really looks like a blue screen, like, in the back, you know, like rear projection. It really looks kind of fake, but, you know, that's done on purpose.
Yeah. And I mean, you can really tell, you know, it's one part Boyzone and one part, you know, World War II propaganda movie.
And that's another thing about casting Van Dien. There are some shots of him in there that look like they come right out of Triumph of the Will. You know?
Yeah, it's true. He is an Ubermensch.
Now let's also Let's also talk about the fantastic secondary cast, the adults.
Michael Ironside.
Clancy Brown.
I believe Marshall Bell shows up in this one as the guy who's had the I think he's got like post-traumatic stress disorder when they find him.
Yeah, he's hilarious too.
Yeah. I love and it blew my mind when I looked back at it. I never realized that the recruiter from the opening scene is Robert David Hall from CSI.
Yeah.
He's an actor who actually is missing his legs, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lost his legs in an accident. So, I mean, I always got a big laugh out of that scene with the congratulations, son. Infantry made me the man I am today.
It's just, you know, like so much of the movie is, yes, it's over the top. Yes, it's, you know, like, but every single element, like everything they play up in it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I've always thought it was like the most successful blockbuster that Verhoeven did, at blending all these things he loves and just make it work. And the critical commentary, you know, I think it works better than in RoboCop and Starship Troopers.
I agree. It's more of a, like, RoboCop is kind of so much a product of its time. You know, RoboCop is definitely an 80s movie.
Oh, right? It could only exist in the 80s.
Yeah, whereas Starship Troopers is, you know, like, it is kind of more of a timeless message, you know?
Great tagline in that one, too, man. Welcome to the front line of the final frontier.
My favorite line, I think, is still, the only good bug is a dead bug.
Oh, man, I love it. The last TV spot they ran for it before opening weekend with the on November whatever, they'll find out that they just messed with the wrong species. And I forget whatever, at the time, hot heavy metal song playing. I think it was Song 2, actually, by Blur.
Oh, okay.
All the action sequences cut together. That had me pumped.
I still love the little interstitials and stuff, too. Like, I thought that worked.
Yeah.
That worked a little better than the ads in RoboCop as well. You know, the whole,
want to know more?
These kids are doing their part. And you see all the kids stepping on the cockroaches. And, oh, that was hilarious. And, like, they had the soldiers are handing all the kids their guns.
What's it thinking, sir? What's it thinking, Colonel?
It's afraid.
Big triumphant ending, right? It's afraid. Yay! Just such a great movie.
Oh, yeah.
We've won space.
And then at the end, you see that the war just goes on, and Rico's basically become Michael Ironside.
Yeah.
Now, yes, Gabe, but it did lead to a fantastic CG animated movie by Shinji Mikami.
And actually, you know what?
His name. What is his name? Oh. Is it no, Mikami is the game director.
Shinji Aramaki.
Aramaki, yeah.
Yeah. It also had Starship Troopers 3 Marauder, which was kind of fun.
Yep. It also had Starship Troopers 2, which we won't speak of.
Which was basically the thing set in the Starship Troopers universe.
And had the worst Photoshop cover I've ever seen.
Moving on, we'll move to our bads. Now, I'll establish, I mean, I know this is episode, 28, so you should know this by now. And if you don't, shame on you. Our bads is not necessarily a bad film, just something we think is flawed.
My bad, personally.
It's something that not necessarily is a horrible movie, but maybe it's extremely flawed and has a bad reputation, but we kind of like it. Or it's something that's generally considered to be really good, but there are a few things about it that bug us so much that we just can't consider it the best film by this chosen director. I'm going to go in much the same order I did for the first round, and I'll start with Gabe. Gabe, what's your bad?
There's only one answer, and that is Total Recall. Total Recall, I mean, it's a really, really fun picture. It's a really, funny and entertaining piece of, sci-fi action. But it's badly dated, especially the effects. And that whole ending sequence where, like, they're on the moon and they're on Mars and the air is running out and they're trying to push that button. Like, it just kills it for me.
I like Total Recall, but I mean, I will say I am not at all an Arnold Schwarzenegger fan.
Boo!
I'm just not.
No. I got his back on that, Gabe. If it comes down to me, and I own a shit ton of action movies, when the choice is offered between Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone, 9 times out of 10, I will reach for Sylvester Stallone.
I just, Schwarzenegger is just such a goof.
A slam at cheese?
He's just such a goof. And, like, what I like about Total Recall, I do consider Total Recall probably one of Arnold's best movies, because he's putting forth some kind of an effort with Total Recall, and I think a lot of that is, you know, he came up against someone who's more insane than he is. When Arnold Schwarzenegger works with Paul Verhoeven, that's what it's like when an unstoppable force meets an immovable object, you know?
Your accent is like mine, and you are also crazy.
I like this man.
Now let us film bloody combat and then go grope some ass.
I like Total Recall. Like, as a Verhoeven flick, I consider it one of his better. And I think it works pretty well. I still kind of like the effects work and stuff. I think that was Botine as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, most of it is good, but those eyes bugging out, their eyes bugging out when they're losing air.
Oh, okay, yeah. I remember that actually freaking me out the first time I watched it.
And as much as I like the idea of whatever his name is, Crato, that...
Wait, Quato?
Quato.
Yeah.
Open your mind, Quaid.
And after seeing the much maligned remake of Total Recall starring Colin Farrell, which I actually really, really enjoyed.
I watched it the weekend, and I'll say I was impressed.
I fucking loved it, man. I thought it was great. I think that Arnold was just the wrong choice. I think with a better actor in the lead, I think it could have been a much better movie. I think, like, say, if they had managed to get Peter Weller and had a little mini RoboCop reunion.
My other thing, though, too, is when you're doing a summer blockbuster set on Mars... Right?
Yeah.
I do think that for Total Recall to not only be a success, but to generally be made, they needed, you know, that major action star attached to it.
Yeah, they did. That's true. That is true.
Yeah.
Okay, imagine how much better it would have been if it had been Stallone. Or Kurt Russell.
Oh, man. Why wasn't Big Trouble in Little China hit? Then Kurt Russell would have been in Total Recall.
There's something about...
The problem with that, though, man, is Benny would have never got to double-cross him because, you know, Snake would have just shot him in the back as soon as he turned around the first time.
But there's something about Arnold and, like, his expressions and stuff that really makes you believe that this guy doesn't know the hell what he's doing.
Yeah, and I think that works to Arnold's benefit for sure.
Total Recall, he's almost entering into Jackie Chan territory.
Yeah.
You know, where Jackie Chan, like, in his fight scenes, you got him running around, and he always seems like he's scared witless.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's what works in Total Recall is, you know, every action sequence with Quaid, he seems like he's doing everything he can possibly do just to stay alive. Mm. Right?
And it's got one of my favorite Arnold one-liners of all time, and in consider this a divorce.
Apparently that was Arnold's line. Apparently he cooked that one up.
And again, I mean, it's the Ronnie Cox, Michael Ironside double.
Yeah, and they were both awesome.
To tell you the truth, I don't think it's quite as strong as Ronnie Cox and Clarence Boddicker.
No.
But... Man, Cox dials it up to 11.
he's a bit crazier in Total Recall than he is in RoboCop.
Yeah, well, he seems a little bit reserved, and, like, I was a little bit disappointed at first when he starts talking about, you know, I've got this dream, Richter. And then about 3 seconds into that speech, he just goes apeshit. Just loses against the crazy eyes.
I enjoy Total Recall. I do. I really did.
It's my bad as well, actually, Gabe.
Nice.
I'm going to throw that in there because I'm going to come in now when Steve's done.
Yeah, I mean, costume design, excellent. Sets and stuff, fantastic. The script was great, like the way it all unfolded, you know. It wasn't a solid adaptation of the Dick story, but it worked really well. You know, like it flowed really nicely. And
when does anyone ever do a concrete adaptation of a Dick story? You've
never
got to change
Scanner Darkly.
Yeah. But
Scanner Darkly is one of those love hate movies for me.
It's one of those movies that shows why directors don't do literal adaptations of Dick.
Yeah.
I love Scanner
Darkly. Oh, I do too. I think it's fantastic. But, you know, it's not for everybody.
No.
It really isn't. But, you know, it was a great production, and it really showed what Verhoeven could do with a huge budget, you know, with, like, basically, you know, a blank check from Hollywood to make an action movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it led to Starship Troopers, obviously, but it was...
And there's definitely that goofy Verhoeven sensibility to
it. Yeah, definitely, and the action is great. I mean, like everything else he does, the action sequences are fantastic.
Oh, man, that chase sequence with the poor guy on the escalator.
Oh, he was just on his way home from work, and then Doug Quaid decides to use him as a human shield.
That's somebody's husband, man. That's somebody's father.
Yeah, you know, and he just sits turned into hamburger, just like
and,
that.
I think that was almost worse than Mr. Kenny.
It was brutal.
I've always loved the first scene where he takes where he's still on Earth and he's taking some bad guys down in the alley where he. Like, he first realizes he might be something else than what he is.
Actually, I think that was the debut of the Arnold Schwarzenegger neck break.
It might have been.
They, you know, putting him into a headlock and just wrenching him straight up in the air. That is, in a Total Recall, it looks vicious when he's doing it to people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. When he kills Budget Danny DeVito. And... Yeah, Total Recall was a great flick.
And then he rips Michael Ironside's arms off.
Yeah. See you in the body.
My favorite kill in Total Recall is the doctor when they're strapping him back into the...
Thing in the neck?
Yeah, when he rips out the restraint for whatever reason, has a 2-foot-long spike attached to it. I'm assuming that's the locking mechanism. And just spikes buddy through the neck, you know, which also happened in RoboCop. I think Verhoeven just likes doing that. But it's just, you know, you just get this huge arterial gush. Disgusting.
Verhoeven loves his juice.
But some of the stuff that kills Total Recall for me is outside of, you know, I like Schwarzenegger in it. Like Michael Ironside, love Ronnie Cox. I can even dig Sharon Stone in it. Mm-hmm. A lot of the cast, though, are just horrible.
Rachel Ticotin.
Yeah, Rachel Ticotin, who is playing... I'm assuming that was supposed to be Maria Conchita Alonso. Because you've got this girl who just, you know, has no charisma and just doesn't get the type of movie she's in.
No.
Right? And then Benny? Oh.
Quaid! Quaid! Ugh.
I mean, Johnny Cab's better.
Yeah. And of course Marshall Bell pops up here too.
I didn't even mind Marshall Bell.
Marshall Bell's always awesome.
Yeah. But it's just Total Recall for me. It's not as strong as RoboCop. It's definitely not as strong as Starship Troopers. But on the other hand, I mean, there's a reason it's revered as an action classic.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, like, as in the pantheon of Arnold Schwarzenegger films, it's definitely very, very, very close to the top, like top three, you know?
Yeah, well, to me, you know, with Schwarzenegger, you've got the first Terminator, you've got Predator, and you've got True Lies.
Yeah,
That's my golden triangle of Ernie, you know? And then below that, you've got stuff like Eraser and Total Recall.
What about Conan the Barbarian?
Oh, Conan the Barbarian doesn't even exist as a Schwarzenegger movie. Conan the Barbarian is just that. I hold Conan the Barbarian with
you
the same
forgot movie. Commando, Mercer.
F Commando.
Listen, Gabe, the fact that we live in a world where people hold Commando with reverence and everyone calls Cobra a piece of shit.
I love both of these flicks.
He cuts his pizza with a pair of scissors, man. That's how much he doesn't care.
Spend their Saturday afternoon clanking axes together. You know, the first villain that Cobra offs, how do you know this guy's evil? Because he parks in a handicapped spot. But yeah, no, like I hold Conan the Barbarian with the same reverence that I hold something like Star Wars.
Okay.
Right, that's not a Schwarzenegger movie. That's just, you know, Conan's almost holy.
Yeah. So your bad was Total Recall as well, John?
Recall, yeah. Even though I just spent like 20 minutes saying how awesome it was.
It is an awesome movie. It just, it doesn't have, for me personally, like the big thing that separates Total Recall from Verhoeven's, like, his sci-fi trilogy, his other two big sci-fi flicks. Total Recall doesn't really have that thoughtfulness that Starship Troopers and RoboCop have, you know?
It wants to make you think about what's real or not, but it doesn't really earn that.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it does feel more...
That remake does a whole lot better.
Yeah, it does. It really does. And I think that's, like, a lot of it, too, is, you know, I think Verhoeven wanted to put more of that in there. But I think, you know, like, Total Recall really feels more like movie by committee. Like, it really feels like, you know...
That's a great idea, Paul, but you're making an Arnold Schwarzenegger summer blockbuster.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, this movie belongs to TriStar Pictures, not Paul Verhoeven. You know?
Yeah, Paul, you know, it's our name on the check for $60 million.
So. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then our name on the check for $100 million in marketing. You know?
Yeah. Although, you know, he did deliver a major hit, and I'm very happy that it was a hit.
For my bad, I'm going to get away from Verhoeven's more well-known movies, and I'm going to go with another one that I really do love. I mean, it's a great movie, and it stars one of my favorite actors, but it does have its issues, and that is the 1985 sortie movie, Flesh and Blood, or Flesh Plus Blood, as some people call it.
Those people are idiots.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Do we call Seven Seven N?
Seven N.
It's not a plus. It's I always just thought it was supposed to be like a Templar cross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, Flesh and Blood. It's a great looking movie. Rucker Hauer acts the shit out of it as he always does. But it's kind of slow moving.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not really a whole lot of grab there, you know. Like, it's a great looking movie. The action sequences, when they do kick in, are up to Verhoeven's usual awesome standards. But it's the whole impetus for it. The whole, you know, hey, this chick is hot. Let's take this castle, you know.
And there's some major pacing problems.
Yeah, it is a slow moving movie. It really is a slow moving flick. But that said, I mean, like I said, the costumes and stuff are great. The look of the movie is fantastic. The action sequences are amazingly well done. And it is something like, you know, of an overlooked gem, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I look at a movie like Lady Hawk, which has this really really big cult following. You know, Lady Hawk has a huge cult following, or Krull. Has a huge cult following. Neither of those movies is deserving of it. Flesh and Blood is deserving of a following. You know, that movie does deserve a bit more than it gets.
And it's one of those rare movies where it really feels like you're in the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Everything looks grimy and smelly. And
very, very unsanitary.
And it's kind of like... It's like the ugly duckling in Verhoeven's filmography. It's really like the duck.
It doesn't feel like the rest of his movies.
Yeah. And he's never done another, like, medieval thing like this, except for his TV stuff you said at the beginning.
Yeah. He did do, he directed a few episodes of a TV series. But yeah, it was different.
And I mean, Full Frontal Jennifer Jason Leigh. You can't go wrong with that.
There is that. There is definitely that. And what there's so much about it that I like. There is a lot about that movie that I like. And I mean, I'm a big fan of anything pretty much period anyway. You know, like any of these medieval period or like Victorian or Renaissance. You know, like all of these period films, I love them, right? Anything that really feels like it transplants you to another time, it hooks me. So that's why I think part of why I enjoy Flesh and Blood so much. That and, well, hey, Rucker Hauer and Jennifer Jason Leigh with no clothes. So, you know, it is a good flick, but, you know, if you're looking for what you normally would get out of a Verhoeven film, or even, like, Black Book, you know, like a little bit more cerebral, a little bit more, you know... It still has those Verhoeven touches in terms of direction, but it doesn't feel like RoboCop or Starship Troopers, obviously. But Flesh and Blood is just kind of, You know, it's a good movie. It's worth watching, but not to seek it out if you're ever hoping.
No.
And, you know, like, it, like, you're not going to unearth some misbegotten, forgotten Paul Verhoeven gem here. This is not Ridley Scott's The Duelists. You know, it's a decent movie, but it's not a Verhoeven movie.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, like you said, it's just kind of, it's an interesting movie, but it's nowhere near like a great movie.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
It is a good movie, and it's worth a watch, but like, don't watch it because you're a Paul Verhoeven completist and you have to see everything he's done. You know?
Watch Petals instead.
Petals! With that, I guess we will move on to our uglies. It's time to knock uglies. I'm going to mix it up a little bit this time. I'm still not going first, but I'm going to start with John.
Oh, God. It doesn't get any uglier. You know, there's when I was sitting there watching this, we were sitting down thinking about this, I was like, well, what am I going to choose for my ugly? You know, I love RoboCop. I love Starship Troopers. I enjoy Total Recall. What is Verhoeven? Hollow Man. I'll go with Hollow. No, because I still enjoy Hollow Man. You know, it's bad, but enjoyable. Basic Instinct. No, but Michael Douglas was at least trying. And then it dawned on me. Showgirls. Showgirls is utterly irredeemable. It's just, you know, the entire movie was sold on just controversy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get to see Elizabeth Berkley's beef curtains.
Oh. No humanitists this year.
The hell is that? But, it's just what, and I can't even, you know, I can't blame Verhoeven because, I mean, it's still slick looking. The acting is absolutely terrible.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, Elizabeth Berkley was never good, ever.
No. And just, like, okay, so you get to see one of the girls from Saved by the Bell naked. Who cares? You know, was she even, like, did she even have any sex symbol cred in 95? Right? And then there's the screenplay. But Joe Esterhaus, am I pronouncing that properly?
Esterhaus, yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh.
You know, you want to talk about masturbation while you're writing? Just garbage. Utter, complete garbage. At least Basic Instinct had the thriller stuff involved in it. This was just, it was utterly sloppy. This was like late career Tarantino crap. And just an ugly, exploitative, I mean, that's all the movie's got, is just, you know, let's just throw as much flesh and nudity and up at the screen as we can. And it is absolute garbage, and I'm sorry for saying I expected more from Paul Verhoeven. Yeah, I mean, yes, yes, the guy is, you know, loves his extreme violence and everything, but, you know, at the same time, there was always something a little bit more if you dug for it, but Showgirls is nothing. It's empty calories.
Yeah, and the reason I kind of like it is I think I that Verhoeven knew that he was making crap, and like that he run away with it. Basically, it's like to me I see it like some kind of John Waters film. <movie. You know?
laughs> Now I'm picturing Paul Verhoeven with that mustache.
I can't go Showgirls as my ugly. Because there is a certain degree of self-parody there. You know, there is a certain degree of, you know, okay, well, Verhoeven amped up the violence and was successful. Then with Basic Instinct, he decided to amp up the sex and was even more successful. And, you know, it, like, Showgirls was kind of like, well, if I could push it this far with Basic Instinct, let's see how far I can really take it. And at the same time, kind of thumb my nose at America's whole disdain for, you know, sex on screen kind of thing. Like, I could get away with...
And I almost feel like it's a kind of parody of those erotic films, too. I mean, look at that.
Oh,
that
big time. Famous,
that infamous pool sex scene. I mean, don't tell me that's meant to be taken seriously.
No. It does feel like, I mean, I hate the movie. I'm not a fan of Showgirls at all. But, you know, it definitely does feel like a Verhoeven movie.
Yeah,
it definitely has that sly wink and a nod to it, you know?
Weirdly enough,
you two are insane, and I'm going to bed.
Weirdly enough, I kind of enjoy Showgirls. I think it's entertaining. For me, it would be more of a bad. Like, I like it because it's so bad. It would be my Michael McVay choice.
Oh my!
We need to add that category: the good, the bad, the ugly, and the McVay.
it's a shitty movie. It is. It's a really shitty movie. I'm sorry, Brett. I know I really wanted you to be part of this episode so you could defend it. And you know, it's one of those things. Verhoeven tends to have two cults of followers. You know, he tends to have the guys who go for RoboCop and Starship Troopers, or the guys who go for Showgirls and Basic Instinct. And Showgirls does really have this massive, viciously loyal cult following. And, I mean, it's because it's a camp movie. It's a total camp movie, you know? It falls into the same category as something like, you know, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, or it's Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and stuff like that. You know, it's one of those movies that's just so ridiculously over the top that people know it's camp, you know? Like, I've heard guys quoting lines from Showgirls, right? And it disturbs me to an extent, but at the same time, I can understand the appeal even if I don't share it, you know?
Yeah, and Verhoeven has always had some kind of camp stuff, too.
Always, yeah. He definitely likes to thumb his nose, and he definitely likes to poke fun. And I think Showgirls he did, so I can't pick that as my ugly. What I can, however, pick as my ugly is Basic Instinct. Words cannot describe how much I hate Basic Instinct. I have never seen a more pointless exercise in my life. The entire movie lives and dies by two scenes that people thought were ridiculously controversial, with the interrogation room scene and the kinky
bearded thing. Clam
and the kinky sex scene, you know. And it's just like, you know, there's no for a thriller. There's no thrilling to it, you know. This is not Body Heat, you know.
It's not even Jagged Edge.
It's just
low rent.
It moves at a relentlessly glacial pace. It doesn't have any of those trademark Verhoevenisms to it. You know, like, it doesn't have that kooky insanity that Verhoeven is known for. There's no social commentary. There's no, you know, like, it feels like a movie that was done entirely by a hired gun. You know, it feels like Verhoeven managed to infuse that rough sex thing in there, you know, like, he managed to get that hint of over-the-topness. He managed to push something like Total Recall, you know, like, he managed to push the violence, and he managed to try and get an agenda in there at the end. But Basic Instinct feels like that cranked to 11. It feels like, you know, this is a Michael Douglas thriller starring Sharon Stone, and Verhoeven knows how to point and shoot, so we might as well hire him to work the camera, you know?
Well, it's actually really well filmed, I think.
Oh, and, like, well, I mean, it has to be. It's a Verhoeven movie.
Yeah, and like it seems like a soulless attempt by Verhoeven to do a Brian De Palma flick. You know?
and like, that's just it. It feels like, you know, just a shitty, you know, dime a dozen Hollywood thriller. And I also, the other thing I really hate about it is I hate what it did to Michael Douglas's image.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because before Basic Instinct, Douglas was known as, you know, a pretty versatile, pretty well-rounded, and, you know, a great, solid leading man. He was the George Clooney of the 1980s, you know? Then all of a sudden, Basic Instinct comes along, and he's this professional, well-cut businessman/lawyer, you know? Like, every role he gets after that is one of these, like, big business or law firm or, you know, like these rich aristocrats, you know? Like, and he ended up being more well-known for that than for, you know, shit like Romancing the Stone and Black Rain and, like, all these really awesome flicks that he did in the 80s, you know?
He was stuck in this TV thriller thing, too, like with Disclosure and stuff like that.
Why did you bring that up?
Hey, could somebody please explain to me, because Basic Instinct is what really kick-started it, the whole appeal of Sharon Stone as a femme fatale?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is what led to, you know, Basic Instinct led to shit like Sliver and was she in Malice? You know, all those...
That's Nicole Kidman, I think.
Okay, all these crappy, craptastic, crappity-crap-crap, steamy... thrillers that came out in the wake of Basic Instinct, or what was Pacino's one a few years before that? A Sea of Love.
Sea of Love.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Ellen Barkin.
Yeah, you know, let's just take a, you know, a C-grade serial killer screenplay we've got and throw a set of tits on the killer.
Well, Sharon Stone does look great in the movie. And she
does. It was definitely a career-making turn for her.
And but if you want to see a good Verhoeven sexy thriller, watch The Fourth Man instead.
and I mean, like, the other thing, too, is just the characters are so empty. You know? It's such an... I think I know what it is. I think I fucking hate Joe Esterhaus.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it is.
God knows I do.
And like,
I don't think Mel Gibson likes him either.
No.
the thing that I find that misses the most in Basic Instinct is there's not that sense of fun that's most of Verhoeven's pictures.
He was trying to pull off a thriller. He was trying to pull off a straight-up thriller. And, I mean, I don't know how much of that came from him, how much of it came from Douglas, how much came from Esterhaus or the producers. But, you know, it's just it's a wasted effort. It's a waste of Paul Verhoeven. You know,
it seems like it was shot all under glass, like plexiglass or something.
Yeah.
For mine, I had to go with Hollow Man, which is an hour of setup and what, 30 minutes of a chase. That's about it.
So it also has heat vision dong.
Oh yeah, there's Kevin's bacon. but yeah, I mean it definitely feels like it was done. It feels like it was done in the cheap, although like the budget was pretty high because of the effects. But those effects really don't hold up anymore. None of the characters are interesting. The movie isn't engaging on any level. And it's the one where I can really see like some critics of Paul Verhoeven as a misogynistic bastard being true, you know.
If I had the power of invisibility, I'd want to look at naked women.
Yeah, as uncomfortable as it's supposed to make you feel, the rape sequence in it, that just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It was a rape,
you know, like Kevin Bacon, what was his name in it? Sebastian, wasn't it?
Yeah, Sebastian.
Yeah, okay. This is a guy who comes across, you know, at the beginning as an egomaniac. You know? Not a psycho rapist.
Yeah.
Yeah. The guy just, you know, becomes invisible and then up and decides, I'm going to be a sex offender.
And then, like, because of, I'm going to lock up all of the people, all of my colleagues, and start killing them one by one, Michael Myers style.
Now, apparently they explained, like, the psychotic behavior and stuff was a byproduct of the drug or whatever, too. Because the monkey, when they tested it on the ape, he went insane, too, right?
Yeah, but that's still I'll still cry bullcrap. And like the whole last 30 minutes chasing is
when he turns into the Terminator.
Yeah, just an excuse to show up.
He's the Invisible Man, not the Invincible Man.
It's just an excuse to show off the effects and look how rain will look on the invisibility thing. Ooh, water, and now ice.
Now burnt flesh.
And, like, I always hate, and it falls into that whole muscle doesn't matter trip.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty sure there's a part in there where Josh Brolin just waffles him in the head with a pipe.
Yeah, pipe or fire extinguisher or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's
also, Josh Brolin's not a small boy.
No. But that movie is still a waste of Josh Brolin.
I don't hate Hollow Man. Hollow Man is kind of, you know, I don't hold it in the same disregard that I hold Showgirls or Basic Instinct. But again, it's just, you know, it feels like a perfectly good waste of Paul Verhoeven to me.
Mm. And it sparked the question, whatever happened to Elizabeth Shue? I mean,
Hollow Man happened. And
that
turned
poor
into
girl. Did she win an Oscar?
Yeah, she won an Oscar for Leaving Las Vegas, but then she starred in The Saint and in The Hollow Man. So. And The Triggerist.
Oh, God, why did you have to bring up The Saint?
I love The Saint.
I wanted that movie to be so awesome.
I thought it was awesome. I hate you, John Morris.
And now she has to play in Piranha 3D.
Which more people probably enjoyed than The Saint. To be fair.
The guy who played the bad guy in The Saint, I can't pronounce his name. I'm not even going to attempt to. Boris the Blade?
Yep.
His Karl Marx beard in that movie was magnificent.
But to get back on the Hollow Man, like I don't even think it's directed that well, you know. Even Showgirls and Basic Instinct that slick look, but Hollow Man, it totally feels by the numbers.
It had that mid to late 90s blue steel look, you know, like everything was awash in blue brush steel or something, you know, like it just had that, like, everybody turn on the blue light filters look to it.
I mean, it could be a
only it wasn't only the movie wasn't lit by Kaminsky, so.
Yeah,
I was going to say, magic
is quite different.
It could be a Frank Marshall flick, and you wouldn't tell the difference. Yeah.
There you go.
No, I haven't gone back and rewatched Hollow Man since I saw it in theater, which is odd, because Beth has it on DVD. But I always remember the scene when he, I think it's William Devane, the pool. Strangling the pool. I always remember that looking cool.
I don't really remember it.
It kind of looks cool, but I mean, I think that's the only part of the movie that looks cool. It's definitely a waste of Paul Verhoeven, and I didn't like it. It was the second time I was trying to watch it, and I didn't even finish it. I was like, I'm bored now.
Yeah, it says something for it when, you know, I watched it when it was a new I think the day it came out on DVD, I actually bought it. Because that was at the point when I was just building a DVD collection, and every week I had to pick up at least one new release, you know? And I remember watching it that night, I believe. I sat down and watched it. And, you know, I bought it entirely because it was a Paul Verhoeven movie. And I remember being over and being like, yeah, okay, and sticking it on the shelf. But, I mean, I know I no longer own it. It's not in my collection anymore, so God knows where and when I sold it off or traded it off. But, you know, it's long gone and not at all missed, you know? Maybe someday I'll revisit it, but it's unlikely.
But it was nice to see Verhoeven.
But it is not this day.
it was fun to see Verhoeven bounce back from that and then do Black Book.
Yeah, and I mean, and it took a while too, man.
Yeah,
it was quite a while. I think there were 6 or 7 years between the two of those.
Six years.
Yeah, and I mean, Black Book. It was great to hear that he was working again. I mean, that excited me enough. And then when I saw the finished product, I was like, yeah, okay, that's Paul Verhoeven. All right, you know. But now, I mean, it's been 7 years now again.
Yeah, he has something announced. He released, I think he's working in Hollywood. I'm looking at his IMDb page. And, like, his last movie, he did a movie in
Tricked or something? It was supposed to be based on a graphic novel or something?
In 2001 called Stiekspel.
Oh.
In Holland. And then his next movie coming up is called Hidden Force, but it looks like to be another Dutch film.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Stille Kracht. A colonial officer is sent to the island of Java in the Dutch East Indies at the turn of the 20th century.
Oh, well, that sounds kind of cool. Period piece. I'm there. Anyway, parting thoughts on Mr. Paul Verhoeven. Gabe?
Verhoeven is definitely a gifted visual director with a very unconventional way of looking at things, and he can direct action scenes. He's got a great sense of humor. I really, really like his work, and I can't bear to see him go on hiatus for so long. Because I'm always excited to see a Paul Verhoeven flick, and what kind of crazy stuff will he come up with this time.
How about you, John?
I think that in a world where Olivier Megaton is considered an action director, we need Paul Verhoeven. Action does not need to be PG-13.
Definitely not. I think Paul Verhoeven's contribution, I guess is the word I'd use, to the modern action film, you know, like his influence on modern action is often really understated, and I think he deserves a little bit more credit than he gets. You know, everybody goes back to Donner or these guys, but Verhoeven, he was an equal, man. He belongs on the same, you know, shelf with those guys. I think he was and still is a very gifted visualist. I think he does an amazing job in framing and filming an action sequence. I think he always keeps that sense of place intact, no matter how chaotic things get, and that's the most important thing you can do. He seems to put a lot of thought into stuff when he really wants to, you know, like when it's something he's really invested in, or when something where they let him, you know, he really likes to, you know, just take off the blinders, and go. And I mean, I'll always respect the guy for that. He always tries to bring something different to the table. He always tries to kind of put his best foot forward. He doesn't always work. I mean, you know, Starship Troopers initially wasn't a huge success. Obviously, we got Basic Instinct. We've got Showgirls, which I think, you know, I think he made those more as a joke than anything else. I think he made those movies just to kind of thumb his nose at Hollywood, you know, which in and of itself is pretty admirable and deserving of respect. But I want to see him do more. I want to see old school Paul Verhoeven again. You know, I want to see that RoboCop, Total Recall, Starship Troopers Verhoeven come back.
And I think that that's a nice roundup on Mr. Verhoeven. And one thing that I wanted to add, though, is that despite being pegged as the action guy, he is very versatile too.
He is a very versatile director for sure. And you know, like, he isn't, and I mean, I know, like, last week we did Rennie Harlan. Now, there's an action director.
Yeah.
Verhoeven is a bit more of an open, you know, like, he crosses boundaries for sure.
Oh, maybe some that you wish that he didn't cross sometimes.
Yeah, well, yeah, we like casting Elizabeth Berkley in a movie.
Or having that full frontal Nazi officer in the Black Book.
That's.
Or letting Rutger Hauer touch Jennifer Jason Leigh's breasts.
No, I'm cool with that. Go Rutger.
Creepy.
Well, if you want to be disturbed, just watch Turkish Delight and see full frontal Rutger Hauer.
No, why? Why would you do that?
But with that, we'll invite you to tune in next week as we'll be discussing Andrew's choice of director Jean-Pierre Melville, after considered the father of the new wave in France and the master of crime pictures with movies such as Le Samouraï and Le Cercle Rouge.
And because he's a French director, we'll have an awesome line on proper pronunciation.
Oh, dude, I'm not even going to say it. I'm just going to have an awkward pause when I go to say the name of a movie so Gabe can say it.
So I guess all that's left to say is...
See you next Wednesday.
Sayonara, RoboCop.
See you at the party, Richter.